The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
From Master Dogen's Genjo Koan, Section 11. Attaining this place, one's daily life is the realization of ultimate reality, Genjo Koan. Attaining this way, one's daily life is the realization of ultimate reality. Thus, if one practices and realizes the Buddha way, when one gains one Dharma, one penetrates one Dharma, when one encounters one action, one practices one action. Since the place is here and the way leads everywhere, the reason the limits of the knowable are unknowable is simply that our knowledge arises with and practices with the absolute perfection of the Buddha Dharma. Do not practice thinking that realization must become the object of one's knowledge and vision and be grasped conceptually. Even though the attainment of realization is immediately manifest, its intimate nature is not necessarily realized. Some may realize it and some may not. So when we began this in September, the mountain was still bushy with leaves. The air was warm. I was thinking about looking at this and wondering whether this is like a great symphony, that in this final, almost final section, Dogen is building up the horns, the drums, crescendo, the pace is quickening. And then I realize, no, it's not really like that at all. The Dharma's not really like that. In a sense, in a very real sense, it's, Dogen said it in the first few lines, and then is saying it again and again, but not just the same thing, but not something altogether different. The Buddha said his Dharma was good in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end. We might think of that as through the course of one's whole life, or we could think of it as the Dharma itself, in its very beginning, in what appears to be its middle and its end. We tend to rank things and put them into highs and lows. So when you're first given beginning instruction, usually directed towards breath awareness, and you're beginning, it's like that's a beginner's practice. True. But to think that that's what it is, all it is not true. When we say that there are fundamental teachings and practices, it doesn't just mean elementary. It doesn't mean elementary. It means fundamental all the way. In a very real sense, we just spend our whole practice lives continuing to come back to over and over again the fundamental teachings that we encountered early on. Mazuma Roshi said, a fish that tries to find out how big the ocean is before swimming in it will never discover its vastness. We could kind of do that. It's like with this, we can want to know, with the practice, we can want to know, well, what are the possibilities? What's my potential? What's going to happen? How's it going to go? Before we step into it. We can't know that in advance. We can hear other people's stories. People love to tell stories about their heroic journey. We can read the reports of those who've come before us. And that's something, but it's not telling us. It cannot tell us what our own journey is going to be. And that's why faith is so important, so marvelous, so interesting. It's essential precisely because it is not based on what we already know. That's his whole thing. because we do not know, and we cannot yet know. But we must step forward if we want to engage the Dharma. We have to do that on the basis of something. We call that faith. And what makes it true faith and not a kind of blind acceptance or, you know, assumption of something, of somebody else's experience or teaching or realization. Well, that sounds good to me. I'll take that as my own. The reason it's not that is because on the basis of that faith, the first moment we begin practicing, we're applying that faith directly to the thing that we have faith in, whether we have completely understand that or not. And so from the very first step, that faith is being verified, being put to test. There's nothing blind about it. And in a certain way, it's provisional because it is to be verified. But that just opens the door to more faith, right? Having had faith and practicing on the basis of that and then verifying, seeing that bear out within our own experience, and that gives us confidence to have more faith, to extend that. And so we can talk about having faith in the Dharma and the teachings and our teachers, all the way back to the Buddha, and all of that is true. And all of that is part of our faith, and yet it all comes down to one very personal matter, which is you and me. You know, I was thinking of Dada Roshi as we come close to closing out our 45th year and celebrating that, sort of putting that away for 5 years until we come back, hopefully, for our 50th. And I was thinking of Dada Roshi, you know, beginning this whole big mess, and having, you know, his own training, the support of his teacher, a few bucks, a couple of people to help with, and faith, his own conviction in not just the possibility of Dharma or a monastery such as he has read, but his own experience of the Dharma in his own life and the transformational, the sort of revolution of that. And not just him, but those he was practicing with, his Sangha, Cesar of Los Angeles, his Dharma siblings, those he was close to, the things he saw changing in people. And yet bringing all that to bear in stepping into this, you know, with just challenge after challenge after challenge, but believing in the possibility and the potential. And so here we are. So Dogen says, since the place is here and the way leads everywhere. So this is another way of speaking not only about Buddha nature, but about the fundamental nature of all things. The place is here. You know, so think about the seeking mind. You're sitting. You're exactly in the right place. You're exactly in the right body and mind. You're exactly in the right time. And the mind goes looking for something else. And so then just reflect that no one has ever, in the history of humanity, going back to the Buddha, let go in the previous moment or in a future moment. They've never gained insight in a previous moment or past or future moment. They've never realized themselves at any other time than this time right now. The place is here. And that leads everywhere. If we will. If we will. And so to have faith in the place of our seeking, the place of our liberation, it's here, and it is manifesting. And that will lead us in exactly the right direction, which is the direction of our life. And so we have to just keep cultivating faith in that, right? Because it's not generally how we have functioned. It's got to be somewhere else. It's got to be some other time, some other person, some other situation, some better situation. And that's why I spoke on Monday night about having confidence in our own capacity to realize ourselves, to liberate ourselves, which is admittedly rather audacious, right? It's audacious just to admit it, right? Maybe that's why we don't want to. We're reluctant to admit it because it feels audacious. Does it feel egoistic? Not if it's true. It's not egoistic to realize that there's nothing to hang an ego on. It's only audacious because it's such a radical departure from what we know and what we've seen, and radical because it's not some other place and time. Not some other person. So then because of this, Dogen says, attaining this place, your daily life is the realization of ultimate reality. Attaining this way, my daily life is the realization of ultimate reality. I remember very early on when I was becoming on Sundays before I lived here, and Dada Roshi would be talking about Zazen. You know, in those early years, it was different. I mean, the training was the same, but we who were coming here, you know, Buddhism is, it wasn't like it is now. It wasn't normal, right? It wasn't, you know, common. It wasn't something you bumped into a lot. Very few people knew about it. It was hard to find out about it. Most of what people knew were just a lot of fantastical ideas. Daydreams, fantasies. So Dada Roshi would spend a lot of time just talking about the essentials of practice, what it is. He spent a lot of time talking about what it wasn't, right, to try and help clear up some of those false assumptions. But he would talk about practicing the breath, and he would talk about it as a complete practice, a practice that somebody could develop the whole of their mind and their cultivation of wisdom and compassion with, which is just another way of saying that he fully empowered it, right? He didn't present it as a beginning practice. He fully empowered it, which as a beginning student, practicing the breath was extremely good, right? Because not only did it, it wasn't so much that it gave me a sense that I was, you know, because it changed the way I related to it. You know, if I thought, well, this is, you know, necessary and good, it's just a beginning, it's what beginners do, so let me do what beginners do until I get onto the real thing. That wasn't the way he was talking about it. And that helped me to not think about it that way, which meant I empowered, as much as I was able to at that time, that practice that I was doing, rather than seeing it as something provisional or, you know, sort of a half-weight, really seeing it as something that was complete, and that it was just up to me to try and practice it in that way, have faith in it. So then because this place, this way, is the realization of ultimate reality, when we encounter one moment, one reality, we practice that. And just to think about the training of that in a world in which there's so much we are not in control of. We cannot predict, right? Things are ever changing because all is impermanent. We are getting older. We will probably, in different ways, have illnesses if we haven't already. We will, at some point, reach the end of our life. We will experience things, hopefully wonderful, blessed, beautiful, joyful things. We're also probably going to experience very difficult things. So how do we do that? When one moment arises, you practice that moment. Well, how do you do that? Aren't you doing that? Isn't that what you're doing? Every moment when you do Zazen, on or off the cushion. So think about the training of that, that becomes more and more accessible, natural, integrated, that's what you take refuge in. So rather than, you know, reverting to what? Why this? Why me? This shouldn't be happening. Not this. It's this. When you encounter one action, practice one action. Why put it off? Why wait? Why wait any longer? That's why it's so important to sit in as many different states of mind and body and emotion as you can, which means just basically just hang out on that seat for a while. So that we have the experience of that, right? And we can, in a sense, weather, mature our practice in all of those different conditions, all those different circumstances. I mean, there were definitely times through the course of my training where I would, you know, hear that han and think, oh, I don't even know how this is going to happen. I don't know how I'm going to get through that period. I remember one of the first rahatsus I did. It was the very last period before Fasatsu. It wasn't, I don't know, it was Fasatsu. I don't think we were doing that yet, but just for the New Year's. And the period was such that it could have been two periods, it could have been one period. And I remember Myotai said, let's just make it one period. That was absolutely the longest period at the very end decision of my life. I didn't think I was going to make it. But here I am. That's what happens. Those moments of, I can't, how can I, this is not possible, I don't have any more energy, I don't have any more concentration, I don't. One of the Kiwis call it whinging. Complaining. Whinging. So I could whinge all I wanted to, but I was going to end up in this zendo on that seat, and as long as I'm here, like, don't whinge, right? Practice. And then, you know, even if it's difficult, and there are times where it is, and it does, the sky doesn't break open, the clouds don't disperse, it's not like suddenly everything shifts. Sometimes it's just difficult all the way through. I've done sessions that started, that were hard, and I thought, okay, just keep applying because it's going to shift. It's going to shift. It's going to shift. It didn't shift. It was just hard all the way through. And we could think, you know, just as a point of endurance, while you're developing endurance, but if a person is actually trying, is really applying themselves, there's a lot that's happening. A lot that is being developed. A lot of wisdom beneath knowing. Since the place is here and the way leads everywhere, the reason the limits of the knowable are unknowable is simply that our knowledge arises with and practices with the absolute perfection of the Buddha Dharma. Absolute perfection. This perfection that the Dharma speaks of. You know, we think of perfect as being perfect, I don't know, according to our own standards, what we think would be perfect. Right? When Dada Roshi was many years a heavy smoker, there were some people who came and I was like, oh, how can you smoke? You're supposed to be enlightened. The other people came in and think, oh, I'm so glad you smoke. Right? And I used to think, you know, there are different heavens. So for smokers, there's a smoking heaven. Right? Everybody smokes. So it's not that kind of perfection. The great way is perfect like vast space. It has no excess or lack. What kind of perfection is that? Ask yourself the next time you're experiencing something and you're sitting that seems decidedly not perfect. Hard, wrong, incomplete, inappropriate, not the right thing. The way is perfect like vast space, right in that moment, because the way is here. The place is here, the time is here. How is that perfect? What is that perfection? Thinking, talking, explaining, not liking, complaining, it's definitely not perfect. You can prove that to yourself 100,000 times, and you'll prove it imperfect every single time until something stops. In the Soto Shu translation, it says, since in this the place exists and the way penetrates everywhere, the fact that the known limits are not conspicuous is so because this knowing is born together with and studies together with the exhaustive investigation of the Buddha Dharma. This is not an easy passage here. And their footnote says, the limits of this place in this way are not obvious to the practitioner because they're experienced as the practice itself. And there's no gap. Our knowledge arises with and practices with wisdom. Karmic mind arises with, practices and studies with Buddha mind. Delusion is engaged with the same mind that enlightenment is realized with. Buddha said, I and all sentient beings attain the way at the same time. I thought of Dogen's teaching in, I think, the Fascicle Spiritual Language, where he says, when an intimate language, but think of it as an action. When intimate action, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, walking, bowing, eating, when an intimate action meets an intimate person, the Buddha eye sees the unseen. The Buddha eye knows the unknowable. This intimate action is not known by oneself or by others. It's unknowable, but the intimate self knows. That's what we call realization. If the self could know, then it would be like any piece of knowledge. We could all know just by knowing, but it's not like that. And so there has to be an intimate action coming together to meet an intimate person. The action and the person are both in the same place in the same time. And letting go of knowing. That's why Zazen, if we really consider the Dharma, it seems to me that Zazen is the inevitable conclusion. It's the inevitable, the necessary thing that we must turn our attention to. Because it is the most direct way to bring forth this intimate person, which is really just becoming more and more adept at letting go of the non-intimate person, the whinging person, the separating, believing, wanting, grasping, rejecting person. But how do we know what's true? How do you know? What can you trust? You know, when I was practicing on my own for a decade before I came here, you know, if you practice, you're going to have experiences. I mean, in almost every moment, you're experiencing something. And there were times where I experienced something, I didn't know what to do. Like, is this a good thing? Is this something that is like pointing me in the right direction? Is this what? And in a way, fortunately, since I didn't know, I just decided I pretty much would try not to do anything with it, which is just about the right thing to do. Don't do anything with it. Nothing needs to be done. Just carry on. Just keep practicing. But how do we know? How do we develop trust? To be trustworthy. We can think of someone who's trustworthy, they're reliable, we can depend on them. In the Mahayana, the teaching, sometimes you see teaching that basically brings everything down to one thing. The essence of the way is compassion. But compassion is to alleviate suffering. And if the essence of the way is to alleviate suffering, we have to really understand suffering deeply. And in understanding suffering that deeply, we understand its liberation. So you see, they're all bringing us to one place. The Bodhisattva has this great heart of compassion, this loving, magnanimous, generous, caring, trusting. The Bodhisattva path is a trusting path. And to be on the practice is to develop trust. And that's different for everybody. I mean, everybody who comes into practice has been kicked around a little bit. Some more than others. And in that, we can seem to be learning that the world is definitely not a trusting place. not a trustworthy place. People are not trustworthy. So what is this kind of trust that we're cultivating, this great magnanimous heart? Well, if we think of trust as opening the door, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, what does that mean? To see, to hear, to experience, what? Whatever. Whatever is needs to be experienced, whatever's in front of us, whatever's within us. Isn't that what's happening in Zazen? You just sit and the world comes. You do Seshin and the world comes around you. People, we work, we wash dishes, we walk, we wait in line for the bathroom, we sleep in a dorm, right? We encounter each other. This trust of the Bodhisattva is guided by selfless wisdom and lived intelligence and experience. It's discerning. It's not discriminating in the sense of dividing, ranking, creating stages and levels, but discerning, knowing what is true and not true. That's an essential aspect of mindfulness. To know what you're experiencing, to be experiencing what you're experiencing, and to know, it's got a moral element. It's to know whether this is skillful, strengthen it, whether it's not skillful, let it drop away. So that discernment just gets more and more clear. But trust can't be based on our expectations. You know, my brother, who I love dearly, my beloved older brother, he was notoriously late, famously late in my family for everything. I remember one Christmas morning, we were waiting and waiting and waiting because he was going to bring the tree, right? We're waiting and waiting and waiting. And so finally we just said, you know what, we're not going to wait anymore. Like, we're just going to carry on. And if we're headed off somewhere, you can just catch up. And it wasn't mostly out of irritation. It was just like, we're just not going to wait for you anymore. Because in a sense, he wasn't reliable to be on time. He's changed. He's much better at that. But it's like, what do you do with somebody who's always late? What do you do with somebody who you told something in confidence and they shared it with somebody else? You just forsake them? Say, well, I can't trust you, so the deal's off? Or is that trust somehow made wiser, more clear from lived experience? So it's not naive. In a sense, it comes down to how do we see ourselves and each other as we are, as clearly as we can, and don't give up. Don't give up on each other. How do we stay in relation, even if that's through a closed door? Since the place exists and the way penetrates everywhere, the fact that the known limits are not conspicuous is so because this knowing is born together with and studies together with the exhaustive investigation of the Buddha way. There is a very necessary and deliberate aspect of practice where you know what you're doing, you're bringing your attention to one thing, you're aware of that, and you keep returning when your mind wanders. And there is when that deliberateness begins to drop away. And this is true in almost anything that we practice. In the beginning, it has to be conscious. We are conscious about ourselves engaging it. But ultimately, as we continue, it becomes more and more natural and integrated and facile. And we can begin to forget. And there's just the action. The practitioner and the action begin to merge in intimacy, which means we need to stop comparing and judging. You know, that's why it's important to have more than reasonable, have confidence in what you're doing when you're practicing. Not arrogance, but just confidence that you basically know what you're doing. If you have this practice or this one, you basically have a good sense of what you're doing. And to the degree that you're, you know, still developing it, learning it, which is going to go on forever, that's just there within your basic confidence of what the nature of that practice is. Because then you don't second guess yourself. You're not sitting there and, you know, hovering over your shoulder, doubting, insecure, comparing, measuring, what if not. You give yourself to it. Somebody came to me during the weekend, a student of one of the other teachers, and said, I'm not clear at all about what I'm doing in my Zazen. I said, well, you should find out, like soon, right away. And she did. I asked her before she left. I said, did you? She said, yes, I did. I said, okay, good. Then Dogen says, do not practice thinking that realization must become the object of one's knowledge and vision and be grasped conceptually. And this just simply happens over and over again. And not just realization, but whatever we're experiencing, particularly if it feels like something that has significance or is important, we grab onto it. We make it the object of our awareness. The self, clinging self, wants something to hold, to identify, to know, to cherish, to praise, to own. And so which is natural. It's what we've been doing. Why would it stop? So you relinquish. You let go. You let go. And if you don't, you will see that that just binds you up and sort of puts a lid and a floor and walls on your practice so that you can't make a move because you're holding on to some idea of something, which is all it is now. And maybe you want to get back there, but you can't. And so sooner or later, most of us are stubborn, so we have to go through this more than once, like lots of times, until we just don't do that. Don't grasp. Don't hold on. Don't try and possess it. It's as though we fear that if we let go, we'll lose something. But if we hold on, we've already lost it. So even though the attainment of realization is immediately manifest, Dogen says, its intimate nature is not necessarily realized. Intimate action is not known by self or other. The intimate self alone knows it. And then some may realize it and some may not. How is this? Everyone has Buddha mind, everyone, which is the mind of enlightenment. Everyone has Buddha nature, which is the basic nature of an enlightened being. That's what the Buddha realized. We also have a karmic mind, a karmic body, a lifetime of experiences and interactions and memories and insults and injuries and assessments about all of those things and strategies about how to make this work or get by or get past. We all have that. And then we come in and we meet this person, this self, that has been met countless, countless, countless times by ourselves, by others, in all kinds of different situations. And every time we did, we responded. We responded, we responded. Oftentimes we respond the same way. And so habits get set up, patterns, our things. We have more than one thing. Our way of being, our self. Some of that is going to be very helpful. Some of it won't. Some of it may be more or less kind of in alignment with what the Dharma teaches. Some of it won't. And we bring all of that in. How could we not? Of course we do. And so we begin in this place, this field, this Buddha field. We begin sitting and we're asked to let go, which means to trust, which means don't react in the old way. What? Are you kidding me? Right? Of course, none of this is verbalized or, you know, like the end of beginning instruction, how many of you are willing to let go? Every hand would go up, right? And we do, and we have. I mean, letting go doesn't begin the moment we start practicing. But now it's conscious. It's deliberate. It's a practice. And so the degree to which all of that stuff that we brought in with us sort of predisposes us or helps us in practicing is going to vary. Our willingness and ability to trust, to let go, to be effortful, to persevere, to be uncomfortable, to just be within our structure, to be part of something with other people. Our ability to see cause and effect, to actually examine our actions and what are their consequences, to live within the precepts, right? To some degree, and hopefully more and more. And very importantly, like, why are we doing all this? Because all of that is just a lot of, you know, a big ask if we don't know why we're doing it, at least reasonably well, enough to get started, enough to hold us there when we'd rather not. Bodhicitta. You know, I think of the Buddha on the night of his enlightenment, and it said that Mara came and just kind of let him have it, right? Everything. Because he really, really, you know, the Mara's job, and Mara, like all the sort of demons and Lord of Death within Buddhism, they're like bad. They're not like bad, that's just their job, right? Mara's job is to just mess with you and mess you up. Don't take it personally, right? The Lord of Death, right? Even though the Lord of Death is the one you got to deal with when you die and deal with your karma, it's just his job, right? So there's no like evil beings out to get you. So Buddha was visited by Mara, whose job, and this was a big one right now, because he saw that Buddha was on this moment of realization, and Mara's job is to not let that happen. And so he threw at him everything he had, right? Armies and seduction and highs and lows, the whole full Monty, and wanting just one thing. Simple, just one thing. Do this for me, would you? That's all he was asking. Turn away. That's all I wanted. Not asking too much. Turn away. And the Buddha said no. With earth as my witness, with this ground, this earth as my ground, with this earth as my body and mind, I am here. The place is here. The time is here. And so when we see thoughts, clouds, sensations, mist, emotions, just echoes, echo, 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 echo. These different images that are used to convey the sense of an illusion, of an apparition, something that's there like a mirage on the ground, but when you come up, there's no water there. A cloud you see through, but if you've ever flown through in a plane, right, there's something there, but you could not stand on it, could not hold it in your hand. Thoughts, sensations, emotions, memories. To see them like clouds and mist and echoes. To let them come, let them go. That's what they'll do. That's what they are born to do. They are born to be unborn. They are born to not exist. They are born to not persist. They are born to not make you turn away. They don't have a mind. They're not out to get you. But they sure do seem like it sometimes. And so to see them that way, something just passing, and then it passes. How about that? That's why it's so important in Sesshin that it's sustained. It's sustained. So that moment after moment, period after period, day after day, we're just watching the world, the mind, this life, this being, this self arise and go, just like a cloud. These emotions that we can get so embroiled in, invest so much in, they just come and go. And because it's a middle path, nothing is invalidated, nothing is denied. That's one of the unskillful impulses. But because it is a cloud, it is mist, it is an echo, we don't grasp at it. That's one of our other impulses. And those two basic impulses, if we just keep those in mind, is in my opinion, the essential guide. Because if there's not aversion and grasping, what else is there? See. You'll see. It's right there. And it's peaceful. And it's endless. And it's you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.